Log Talk Radio.
Welcome to the PW Torch Livecast post-impact show. It is Thursday, April 27th, 2017. I am PWTorch.com's Mike McMahon, joined alongside by PWTorch.com's Andrew Socek. Andrew, how are you this evening?
Mike, I'm doing pretty good. I think I'm starting to accept the Matthews thing. I just can't fight it tonight, so I'm doing okay.
So I'm going to get this right out of the way. I only saw maybe a quarter of this show. I had a commitment that took me out of the house tonight, so I was not able to catch most of this episode. I did see about the last half hour or so, but I do know that I did read through a report quickly when I got home here, so I do know what happened. We'll run down the show quickly. Andrew and I'm going to lean on Andrew for most of the reaction for the show because a lot of it I didn't see. But there's a couple of bigger picture type topics that we're going to discuss on Impact tonight as well. And you can give us a call at 515-605-9345. And as always, if you do want to get into the caller queue, if you want to get on the air and you are on hold, you just have to make sure you hit the number one. That's going to make sure it pops up into the queue to let us know you want to get on the air. So let's go through this episode of Impact Wrestling here on April 27, 2017. And the show opened with Josh Matthews. And no surprise. I mean, from the little bit that I saw, Andrew, it didn't seem like the overall announcing was that bad. But in terms of how they played this angle, what was your take on the developments of the Josh Matthews, Jeremy Borash angle that they played up? It looked like, especially at the beginning of the show.
Yeah, overall, the announcing was definitely better tonight. It seemed that Matthews turned down his act by 50-60%. So while it was still, as a whole, bad and distracting at points, it was definitely better. It got the show off to a bad start, of course, just like, you know, last week. It ended with Matthews and Borash instead of, a low-key coming back. And just to start off with that this week was pretty tough. To just kind of sit through. Luckily, it wasn't as overwhelming as it has been in the past.
Well, they opened the show. Well, the first match of the show was a returning Matt Sydal, and he defeated Trevor Lee. Another pretty big, surprising return. Impact's been able to do this now for the last several weeks, obviously with a number of talents they've lost, which is one of the bigger picture items I think we'll talk about in a little bit. But another pretty big name, you know, coming back into the fold for them.
Yeah, I'm glad they are investing in the X Division. There's a lot of people that need character overhauls, like Suicide or Marche Rocket needs something. So I'm glad that they're bringing in new people that fans know that can maybe help just the division as a whole. I was glad to see Sydal. I think he did a good job. He looked in great shape, as he should be, because he's been in ROH lately. But it was frustrating to see him just immediately go over on Trevor Lee. It's just another in a long, long, long line of former WWE guys coming in and beating a TNA or Impact guy. So wasn't thrilled with the result, even though he looked good.
You know, the interesting thing that I thought when I saw the result here was, once again, I mean, it sort of feels like they're just throwing away the Andrew Everett build, which they built to relatively well over a couple of weeks, and it looked like he was in line for a one-on-one match, and he never got it. So it was a little weird, I think, and almost, at least it felt like, that they might be passing that right over and going right into other things with Trevor Lee and that X Division title.
That's a good point. I don't even know why that didn't, like, cross my mind, probably because they didn't do anything with it last week. But if that's the, like, that's really disappointing, because they built that up, and now they just had Lee lose last week. He just lost tonight, so there's no, like, satisfaction in seeing Andrew Everett finally topple him. So yeah, that's a good point.
I mean, I guess the one thing you could say is maybe they're going to go in and do something with Lowkey and Andrew Everett. You know, maybe they're going to go with Andrew Everett earned a title shot, not necessarily a shot at Trevor Lee, and maybe that's the direction they go. But yeah, no, just it seemed a little weird to me when I was scrolling through the report when I got home this evening, and I was like, oh, once again, it sort of seemed like they are over that, even though they had built to it relatively well. From there, they went to an EC3 and James Storm promo segment. They ended up brawling here at the end. Obviously, EC3 cost James Storm the world title on last week's show. And then an interesting line at the end that I think is going to really cement Ethan Carter as a heel again. He grabbed the mic and said that he's a Carter and this company needs him. Anthem has not been shy about making Dixie Carter out to be a heel. And this seems like another trip down that road, but I thought that was a pretty effective way to end that segment.
Yes, I agree. As long as she doesn't come back in any form. I know Impact thinks any kind of heat is good heat, like Josh Matthews. But if he just plays up that he's related to her, I'm totally fine with that. That could be some good heat for him. But if she comes back I can't even imagine having her as a regular character again.
I can't imagine that's going to be the case. Not with Jeff Jarrett seemingly in charge, you know. It is interesting, though, like you said, because they seem a little tone deaf, at least when it comes to the Josh Matthews stuff. But I would find it hard to believe. And, you know, maybe they made up a couple years ago when Jeff came back into the Hall of Fame thing. But I would find that to be very odd if they brought her back to be a character on television, only because I think people know the negativity that was surrounding, you know, the end of her reign as owner of the company. I guess you never say never. I would be really surprised.
Yeah. And kind of the talent as a whole has been kind of, a few of them have been open about the prior era and how they didn't like the old management. I know ODB said something to that effect. So that should hopefully keep her away, you know, that they don't want to get any more heat in that realm.
Yeah, I think guys, you know, like getting their checks, which I can't blame them for. Then from there, a GFW women's title match where Christina, I'm going to mess up some of these names, I'm sure, but Christina Von Erie retained her title and beat Ava Story. What was your thoughts on this match in particular, but then also having the GFW women's title defended on this show?
I thought this was a bit strange because last week they kind of teased it. They're like, oh, she's going to come in, the woman that holds the GFW title, and I had no idea who they were talking about, so I had to look that up later. This week she showed up, and I couldn't tell if she was supposed to be a heel or a face. She was doing the oi, oi, oi thing like Reno Scum, so I'm guessing she's going to be associated with them. And then her opponent, whose name has already slipped my mind, she was teasing being a heel too, when in the past she had never done that. So a strange debut that didn't really catch on for me, and just another one of those titles that there are way, way, way too many titles on this show right now.
Yeah. I'd imagine they're going to merge some of them here at some point. That sort of plays into where they went next. A couple of video packages, one on Lowkey, talking about the X Division. They played a video package recapping the Wolves feud between Eddie Edwards and Davey Richards. And Mackenzie Mitchell was in backstage. He interviewed Alberto El Patron, but he was interrupted by Magnus, the GFW heavyweight champion. They both were sort of arguing over who was going to be next in line to face Lashley for the Impact world title. It's pretty clear. I don't know about you, Andrew. It seems pretty clear to me that the only reason the GFW title and probably the only reason the GFW women's title are on this show at this point is so that at some point they have unification matches. Now, I guess that's good. You know, if you're going to utilize those wrestlers, I think you need to reference the fact that they are champions in GFW, especially if you're effectively merging the companies. No, like if they build to Magnus against Lashley in a big unification bout, I don't, you know, the GFW title doesn't have a whole lot of stock to me, so I'm not quite sure that the big unification match is going to mean much. You'd almost rather they just sort of absolve it and retire the belts, I guess. I don't know your take here. It feels like to me like they're forcing the titles on the show where they don't really need to be. You can merge the rosters and have the new talent come in, but you don't really need all these titles. Like you said, it's watering it down a little bit.
Yeah, look, when WWE bought out WCW and the Invasion came in, and then they ended up merging all those titles, and then Raw like merged the Intercontinental and Hardcore title and did all this wacky stuff. Like, those titles at least meant something, and people knew what those belts were. So, but I, like, 98% of the people watching Impact has never seen Global Force. They've never been to a show. They've never seen it on TV. So it's just weird to pretend that it actually means something, because it just really doesn't in the grand scheme of wrestling.
Yeah, exactly. That's sort of where it loses it with me. It's just that there's not a lot of stock in those titles. So the fact that you're going to run an angle where you're going to unify them with your world title, I mean, the Impact world title should mean a lot more than the GFW world title, and same thing for the women's title. Although, I think, you know, if you're going to utilize one of them, you could probably utilize the Next Gen title, although that doesn't really have a whole lot of... No one's. It's sort of like the X Division title. No one's explained to me what the Next Gen title means, but I think your explanation of what that title is supposed to mean. I mean, Next Gen, Next Generation, it almost seems to me that, you know, that is supposed to go to a young, up-and-coming guy. You could almost sort of make the Next Gen title Impact version of the NXT title. You know, here's a guy that we think could be our world champion in 2 or 3 years, but the other ones, there's just not, I don't think there's any real reason to have him on the show at this point. And I don't know if you want to put the Next Gen championship on the show without replacing it, having it replace something. You know, maybe the Next Gen championship replaces the Grand Championship, which doesn't really seem to have any meaning other than just being a secondary heavyweight title. There's probably some ways to do it, but really that Next Gen title, if you were to categorize it as your young and up-and-coming title, you know, the people that can challenge for it can only, and you can put some rules behind it. People that can challenge for it can only be in the business, you know, 3 years or less. You know, you can make some sort of parameters where it's the young up-and-comers title. It's sort of the title that people are going to use as a stepping stone to maybe bigger and better things.
Though, correct me if I'm wrong, does Cody Rhodes have that title right now?
He does, yeah. I mean, you'd have to do some movement there, but yeah, he does.
Okay, because yeah, he just, it's not even that. It's that he just signed with Ring of Honor. So that's already like a problem for TNA or Impact and how they want to like, that's a big problem, makes them look kind of foolish. And I guess I don't know what goes on at the taping. Maybe that comes into play within the next few weeks.
Exactly. Yeah, that's a good point. I don't know either. Or, you know, maybe there's a deal worked out where he's allowed to finish his dates or something to that effect. Or they allow him to go back for one date to drop it, or who knows. But all right, you know what? Let's take a quick time out because we're about halfway through the show and we are right at our first break. So as we go into our first break, Andrew and I will come back recapping more of this week's episode of Impact. You can get on the line at 515-605-9345. Andrew will send along our trivia questions as we go on to our first break again. And the first trivia question of tonight's show, what was the name of Simon Diamond's stable in TNA? We'll have the answer to that question. More of our recap of this episode, some big topics, bigger picture topics we're going to hit on later, and your phone calls as well at 515-605-9345. You are listening to the PW Torch Livecast.
If you're like me, you've got a list of your favorite podcasts that you listen to throughout the week and also your favorite websites that you listen to throughout the week, but they don't always overlap. But in the case of PW Torch, they do. We hope not only will you listen to the PW Torch livecast every day, but also visit pwtorch.com every day for the latest insider perspective, breaking news, TV reports, live event reports, live pay-per-view coverage, exclusive editorials, and a wide range of other features. Check it out every day. It's mobile-friendly, desktop and laptop-friendly. Stay up to the minute, stay up to date with pwtorch.com.
All right, back here on the PW Torch livecast, Impact post-show. After that backstage segment with Alberto El Patron, they went to Davey Richards challenging Moose for the Grand Championship, which we just talked about. Moose had D'Angelo Williams and Gary Barnidge, two NFL players, with him for this match. Davey Richards won the first round. Moose won the second round. And then I think Davey Richards wins by DQ. They never really gave an answer here, it seems like. But Eddie Edwards ran out and attacked Davey Richards in the third round. That ended the match. Andrew, what were your thoughts on this match? I mean, clearly it seems like they were continuing the Eddie Edwards-Davey Richards feud.
Sure. Just quickly, I will. The answer to the trivia question is.
Oh yes. Yes.
The name of Simon Diamond's stable in TNA was Diamonds in the Rough. Simon Diamond, Elix Skipper, and David Young. They were basically jobbers, which was unfortunate. But
that was a name for a stable, though.
Yeah, I thought they had some potential. I always liked Elix Skipper. It's actually interesting. I was going back and reading some old Torch issues around when TNA started, and the management had really high hopes at the time for David Young for some reason, which I found interesting because he never really panned out for them. But, Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was going to say, there's a great clip somewhere, it's probably on YouTube, of a Lance Storm shoot interview where he's talking about Elix Skipper, and it was when they were doing Team Canada stuff, I think, in WCW, and I think Elix was part of that group. And he's talking about, you know, they were about to debut, or it was early in their run as Team Canada, and somebody said to Elix, because his whole gimmick was he played in the CFL, the Canadian Football League, and someone said to Elix, when you get this win or when this big thing happens, you need to do a celebration dance, you know, like you just won the Super Bowl. And Lance Storm tells a story where he goes, oh, you mean the Grey Cup, which is what you win in the CFL. And Elix looked at him and went, well, what's the Grey Cup? And Lance tells this great story where he's like, well, you know, your gimmick is playing the CFL. You need to know what the Grey Cup is. But yeah, he was another one, you know. He seemed to have, I mean, even in his WCW days, he seemed to have a boatload of potential and just, you know, no, it wasn't, I guess, ever able to realize some of the ceiling that I think some of the people thought he may have been able to get to when he first debuted, just because he was pretty athletic.
Yeah, I thought the Triple X stable is one of the best that TNA has ever had. And then as soon as they broke up, Low-Key left the company. Skipper just kind of jobbed him out for the rest of his run. So it was kind of hard for him to ever really gain momentum on his own.
Yeah. All right. So I guess back to this week's episode, like I said, Davey Richards, Eddie Edwards interferes, cost Davey Richards a grand championship. Sort of seemed like, from what I could tell, that, you know, I didn't see this match, like I said, but it looks like they're continuing the Wolves feud here.
Yeah, the match I thought was pretty good. I think Davey Richards works well within the confines of the Grand Championship because he does a lot of strikes, a lot of kicks. He looks like an MMA fighter. So it was on the higher end of Grand Championship matches we've seen so far. My big problem with the match is I hate when celebrities or athletes or football players, no matter how athletic they are, when they easily beat up a professional wrestler, it drives me insane, and that's what happened here. If you didn't see it, like Davey Richards goes at him, he gets body slammed. He lays on the ground for 30 seconds, like he'd just been powerbombed through a bunch of tacks, and it just slowly rolls out of the ring. It was just so bad. The body slam looks sloppy, and you know, we've talked about Davey Richards is just like the best thing going in Impact, or one of the best, and just to see him have to not sell for Eddie, but instead sell for two guys we'll never see again. It just, I don't know. It's just not for me. It ruined the segment for me.
You know, I agree with you in situations like that. It's one of those things where WWE got a lot of play for Rob Gronkowski at WrestleMania because of two things. It was Rob Gronkowski and it was WrestleMania. TNA or Impact, I'm not sure is going to get a whole lot out of D'Angelo Williams, who is a backup running back for the Pittsburgh Steelers, and Gary Barnidge, who is an okay tight end for the Cleveland Browns, just a terrible team. They're on Pop TV. They're not going to, you know, that clip's not going to get shown on SportsCenter. I mean, is it cool? I mean, might it end up on a website somewhere? Yeah, but there's probably someone you could have put that spot that isn't Davey Richards, one of your hottest heels in the company right now. And I guess, like, that's where I'd have my biggest gripe. You know, they're pushing Jinder Mahal now, but at the time, Rob Gronkowski went after Jinder Mahal, who was an afterthought on the show. He's much more than that. Now they're pushing him towards the top of the card. But, you know, you could have done that with literally anybody else. Just don't do it with Davey Richards, who's been, you know, probably your best heel in the company.
Yeah, exactly. If they're going to do that, do it with somebody else. Like, I'm not a football fan at all, so I do know Gronk, but I don't know these two guys, so it didn't do anything for me. That stuff just frustrates me. Other people will probably not care as much, but boils my blood.
No, I agree with you. I agree with you. After that Congo Kong, it seems to me like he won a squash match over somebody who I've never heard of, Sigmund? I'm not exactly sure how to say his name, but it just looked like Congo Kong won a squash match here.
Yes, he did. And the Hornswoggle, I think, messed up Rockstar Spud's hair, so we didn't even announce the guy, and the announcers were laughing their heads off over Hornswoggle running in. The squash itself was good. Congo Khan looks like a monster. Laurel Van Ness is still doing her crazy thing, so I enjoyed it. The jobber didn't quite have convulsions like the last one, so that was a little disappointing, but still overall, I'd give it a hit.
And this is right where I turned into the show. After that, they went to the Veterans of War, which is Mayweather, which is the former Crimson, and Wilcox, the tag team, the Veterans of War. They beat Fala Ba and Mario Bacara. I know we were both big fans of Fala Ba a couple of weeks ago when that team first debuted. I thought this was a pretty good match. I mean, if nothing else, I thought the Veterans of War looked pretty good, and it's going to give them another tag team. You know, it's going to take some time, I think, to build them up to the point where you want to put them in a match with LAX or one of your bigger tag teams on the show. I guess, which is really just LAX at this point, all the Reno scum. But I think one of those guys are hurt right now too. But you know, I thought they looked pretty good here. You know, it was nothing crazy happened in terms of the match, but I thought it was a pretty good win for those guys. And I think they're going to do something with them. You know, the video package they did on Crimson or Mayweather last week, I think is a pretty good indication that they're going to do something with these guys in the tag team division.
Yeah, I thought it was a decent showing for them. I can't remember the other guy's name. Mayweather's partner. I thought he looked a bit sloppy in some of his moves.
He just seemed
Wilcox. That's right. Wilcox seemed a bit off, I thought. I don't know. The match just didn't quite click for me. I feel like almost the other team has more potential here. But obviously, they're not the ones that are going to be getting any sort of push soon. I thought it was a decent start overall. Nothing I was overly thrilled or upset about.
Yeah, exactly. There wasn't anything, like I said, it wasn't a big deal. It just seemed like I don't want to say filler, but, you know, just sort of thrown out there to show us who the Veterans of War are. But I didn't think it was a bad match by any means. You know, I thought it did probably what they intended for it to do. And then in the main event, Decay versus LAX in a street fight for the Impact Tag Team Championship. And LAX retained their titles in what I thought was a pretty entertaining street fight. You know, I'm not a big fan of doing these types of matches all the time, and Impact has been pretty good about spacing them out. You know, there's obviously a lot of hoopla around a match like this. You got a lot of toys out there for the guys to play with: tables, thumbtacks, chairs, garbage cans, all this stuff. And you know, Decay is used to that type of setting. I thought that they looked good here, although clearly they seem to be on the outs here. And we know Crazy Steve left the company, so the team itself is going to be disbanding. This is probably going to be the last time we see them. But I thought LAX looked good here too. You know, I like the finish of putting Steve through the table, and I like the way, specifically on the finish of the match, where I think it was Homicide, and I don't remember which member of LAX was on the other side, but they both got up in the apron, and while Homicide was going up on one side, whoever it was on the other side kind of snuck up. You know, he didn't just run up and hit Crazy Steve. He sort of waited there, and I think he yelled Steve before he jumped up and delivered the kick, almost to sort of get his attention. I thought it was just a cool little detail. In a pretty good match to put LAX over and probably spells the end for Decay, I would think.
Yeah, I enjoyed the match as well. I'm sure I've brought up a few times, but it's just one of those things that you're not going to see in WWE, really. They did a couple, Eric Rowan and Randy Orton just had a match that was pretty tame for a no DQ match. So this was definitely more violent in that realm without going too crazy. I mean, there was a chair thrown to the head that was, can make you kind of shake your head. But overall, I thought it was a pretty good brawl. And it's unfortunate if this is the end of Decay, that there's no sort of farewell if that's how Crazy Steve's going out. Hopefully they tape something with him within the next few weeks, because I like closure on angles and characters.
Yeah, me too. I don't know. Well, I guess we'll see whether or not they tape anything else. We know that obviously that Steve is on his way out of the company, and that was announced. I think he announced it on Twitter last Friday or Saturday. So if there's anything left here with Decay on the show, there's probably not much left, because I think he announced his departure before the end of the tapings. It seems likely, I think there were some reports out there that he is headed towards WWE. What do you think his role would be there? I was a little surprised when I read that he was on his way to WWE. When I read that report, I think it was over the weekend, just because, he doesn't seem like the type of guy that they would typically go after. I think he would fit in NXT for sure, but it's just that type of character I think they could utilize now, whether it's with the Wyatt family or in NXT. But just his size and his style of wrestler doesn't seem to be typically the guys they go after. Even the indie guys that they've gone after, at least recently, have been bigger guys. Seth Rollins isn't a small guy. There's and maybe, for 205 Live he's a fit, but I'd like to see him stay away from the cruiserweight division. If they're going to use him on the main roster, I'd almost rather it be alongside Bray Wyatt or something like that. But what do you think his potential is for WWE? Is he going to be more of a wrestler? Do you maybe even see himself working into a coach's role of some kind in the performance center?
Yeah, I was really surprised by this. I think he's improved quite a bit since he was in the menagerie with Nux and Revel and the Freak. But he still hasn't struck me as a guy that like Vince McMahon would be into, because he doesn't really cut promos on TV. He just laughs. He's not overly flashy like like some of the cruiserweights. So I guess off the top of my head, I would say he'll show up in the Sanity stable. Otherwise, I would like to see him like in a reformed Wyatt family on the main roster. I think he's a talented guy. That took me a bit by surprise. I just don't think I see big things for him though in WWE. But I hope I'm wrong.
Yeah, it seemed like an odd fit to me. I'm not sure if there's a natural place where he's going to end up. I think, whether it's the Sanity stable, that's the one that I know a lot of people have mentioned right away, and he would be a fit there. But I almost wonder too, with them doing some things with Bray Wyatt here recently, is there a connection there? I don't know though. They don't seem to bring people right onto the main roster very often. They did it with AJ Styles. They did it with, I think, Gallows and Anderson. But other than that, I can't think of many guys they did it with. At least guys that they haven't had there before. Jinder Mahal, when they did the brand split, they brought him right back to the main roster. Rhino, they brought right back to the main roster. But Rhino was in NXT. Was in NXT at first. But it seems like guys that have never been there before, there is a tendency to before they bring them up to the main roster.
Yeah, I would guess he's going to be in NXT. Like if Drew McIntyre comes back and ascends to NXT, I don't think Crazy Steve is probably going to make that jump. Let me just ask you quick: did you see the beating Hornswoggle gave Rockstar Spud with the hammer?
Oh, I did. Yeah, that was an odd segment.
Yes, I mean. Hornswoggle has been bullying him, and then so Spud accidentally like rips off his pants, and then he's violently beaten with a hammer for like 2 minutes, and nobody even tries to stop him. I think I hated it. Like that's way too much to beat a man with a hammer for like a comedy skit, unless they're trying to make Swoggle into like a top star, which is never going to happen. But I didn't get that at all.
What it made me fearful of was, okay, we've got a play-by-play announcer feud. Are we now going to have people feuding over who's going to be the ring announcer?
Oh, I wonder if that's it.
you know, I hope not. I really hope not. But that was the first thing that crossed my mind. I said, man, I hope we're not getting into a ring announcer feud here, too. But, you know, if this was a way, and we'll never know, but if this was, we will know, I guess, in upcoming weeks, if this was a way to get Rockstar Spud away from that role, I don't think that he was bad as a ring announcer. I really don't. But I think he could be really useful to the X Division. I really, you know, the character is a little bit of kind of goofy. I mean, he's a real small guy, but you know what? When they were doing some things with him a couple of years ago, he had a really good match with Kurt Angle. He had a hell of a match with EC3. He's a guy that they could put to really good use, and I don't think he's utilized to his full potential when they're just using him as a ring announcer. I really think that he could have some really good matches, and I think he's just a really good character. He's good on the mic, whether it was as a heel or as a babyface. I think he can generate a lot of sympathy as a babyface because he's so small. But you know, as a heel too, I thought he cut really good promos and he had some good matches. I really would like to see him get involved back in the ring somehow, not as Aaron Rex's lackey, which by the way, we haven't seen Aaron Rex for a while here. But yeah. Not, you know, as Aaron Rex's lackey, not as the ring announcer. I'd like to see him get back in the ring, you know, in some way, shape or form, just because I think he could be really useful either, you know, both ways. I thought he was a good baby face and I thought he was a good heel too.
Oh, completely agree. I think he's a really good underdog character, and they just didn't quite pull the trigger on him when it seemed fans were getting behind him a couple of years ago. And he's had a really rough past, like, 6 months with the original Hornswoggle feud. He lost to him at the tag team Apocalypto night, and then he became Aaron Rex's driver. So. And now he's being beaten to death nearly with the hammer. It's just, I don't get what they're doing with him, but I would take him. I mean, he has a good personality, so I would take him over, like, Marche Rocket, Caleb Conley, and Suicide in the X Division right now.
Not to mention, you want to talk about a company guy. I've seen him do a million interviews. He's gone to Mexico. I mean, the guy will literally do anything for that company, it seems. You would think that should be rewarded. Even if it's new management and it's taken them a while to realize that, you would think that something like that would be rewarded, because I know even from some people I've talked to that have worked there, you know, anytime something needs to be done, if, you know, someone missed an interview and they need someone to fill in, you know, he'll do it. Like, he's just such a company guy. You would hope to see stuff like that rewarded.
Yeah, agreed. I think he's probably one of the most underutilized wrestlers on the roster. Actually, maybe the most, just because he's a ring announcer right now involved in this silly feud. So I hope he breaks out of it, and I hope they actually find something for him to do.
All right, well, let's get to our second commercial break, and then we'll come back with some of your phone calls at 515-605-9345. We'll hit on a couple of bigger picture topics with Impact Wrestling as well. You are listening to the PW Torch Livecast Impact Post Show right here on pwtorchlivecast.com.
Do you shop at Amazon.com? If so, do you know there's a way for you to support the PW Torch Livecast without doing anything different other than starting your shopping at pwtorch.com/Amazon? When you go to pwtorch.com/Amazon, click on the Amazon link, and you land at the Amazon homepage. But anything you buy on that shopping trip, we get a commission for. It's a way to throw a few extra quarters, maybe a couple bucks in the tip jar, as a way to say thanks for what we do here at the PW Torch Livecast. So next time you're about to shop at Amazon, don't type in AMAZ. Stop right there and type in PWTORCH.com/Amazon. That's PWTORCH.com/Amazon. A free, easy way to help support what we do here at the Livecast. Thank you.
Back here in the PW Torch Livecast, I forgot to give our second trivia question before we went to break, so I'll give it now, and that'll give you a couple seconds to answer before Andrew gives us the answer. Our second trivia question of the night: who was the original captain of Team Canada? We just talked about the WCW version of Team Canada earlier, but who was the original captain of Team Canada, Andrew?
So this came to my mind because Scott D'Amore showed up tonight on Impact, so I was looking up some stuff on him. The original captain was actually Teddy Hart. D'Amore was the coach, And during the original X Cup series back in like 2004, Teddy Hart was the captain. Surprisingly, he did not stick around long.
Yeah, he doesn't seem to stick around long no matter where he is.
Yeah.
You know, this actually just comes to my mind. I don't mean to keep bringing up Lance Stormer in the show, but another, I think it was in that same interview that I was talking about earlier, he tells another funny story about the name Team Canada and how they got that name in WCW. Apparently it was a Vince Russo idea, and originally he wanted them to be the Canadian World Organization. And the joke was is that they would not know that it was the New World Order. They would get the name wrong, and they would be the CWO, the Canadian World Organization. And Lance said to him, well, you know, why do we have to be stupid? Like the NWO, the hottest thing in wrestling for the last 2 years, we're going to get the name wrong. Why do we have to be stupid? Why does it have to be funny? And it just got sort of written off. He's like, oh, just do whatever you want. And they came up with the name Team Canada, which is what they call their hockey team. But, yeah, just more Vince. That's not very much. I mean, when I remember hearing the story and going, that sounds like a Vince Russo story for sure. all right, let's go to our first caller. It's from area code 540, and I think this is Boris in Chicago. Boris, is this you?
No, this is Michael in Northwest Virginia. How are you?
Oh, Michael, I apologize for that. I know Boris was calling in from a different number, so I thought this was him. But not bad. How are you?
Yeah. Boris is up north, and let's see. We have to go a little bit the other way to get to him. But, hey, number one, last week we didn't have a show from you guys, right?
No, we had a show last week. It was a couple of weeks ago we didn't.
Yeah.
I think it was like April 9th maybe.
Okay, well, my bad. well, hey, the biggest thing the coming out of this is, hey, the Global Force merges with TNA, number one. And tonight when the first thing that Josh said when he came on air, he goes, well, I'm not going to be critical of TNA. Did you hear that?
I don't think I caught that.
But he opened up the show. He goes, he mentioned the first thing they said was, Josh opened up the show. He goes, well, I don't want to mention bully, JBL loser. I don't know if you all heard that.
Oh, yeah. No. And then, that I did catch. Yeah.
Yep.
they just can't help themselves with some of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they couldn't help themselves. And then the other thing I wanted to point out real quick was, let's see. Well, yeah, actually, like Josh had, like, why is he there?
Andrew and I have been asking ourselves that question for the last couple of weeks.
When the show opened, I go, wait a minute, why is Josh there? And then, go ahead.
Yeah, no, it's, you know, I'm not a fan. I think Andrew and I have talked about it a lot over the last couple of weeks. neither one of us seem to be fans of them almost distracting from what else is happening on the show. I mean, to me, and I think, Andrew, you agree, it's been a distraction ultimately. You know, the whole storyline has been a big distraction from other things that are going on. And I know that their roster is a little bit depleted and they're trying to replenish things and it's a lot of new names. And maybe the idea is, well, the announcers are established names. Let's use them to tell some type of story because we don't have a whole lot of other guys right now. But I think they have plenty of guys. I think their roster is plenty deep. I mean, there's several guys that they don't have on the show from week to week. So, which is good. You know, they're spacing out appearances from guys so they don't get stale. They don't get watered down. But it just, to me, it's distracting. Andrew, I think we're pretty much on the same page, right? It's just almost distracting from what else, some of the good things that they are doing.
Yeah. Oh, completely.
Yeah.
Even with him, like, turning it down tonight, by, I don't know, 50% or whatever, it was still pretty rough at multiple sections where you just wanted him to, you just wanted to yell to shut up, like, because he would not talk about the in-ring action. So, yeah, it was still bad.
Real quick, can I add in?
Sure.
The other thing I wanted to point out was the other idea I had. I took down notes on if I ever get a chance to call in to Wade Keller and we get to talk to EC3, he said something tonight that I was really I've been waiting to ask him for God since forever. Hey, buddy, if you ever get to go to that other company and your name is EC3, do we get to call you do we get to call you Vince, you know, like VKM3 or something, or because I've always wanted to say, hey, you're named after a company that isn't, you know, how do you move forward? That's my question. How do you move forward with this gimmick? He kind of referenced that tonight a little bit, and I was like, well, damn, I thank you for finally addressing this. And but he kind of embraced it a little bit, and I was like, wow. So
how does
EC3 move forward as a guy who was named after a company that has now been, we'll say, somewhat abolished? And if I ever get the chance to ask him that, I would say, hey, what are you going to do? You're all stumped.
Appreciate the phone call tonight.
Yep.
Have a good night. Yeah, you know what, Andrew? That is an interesting point. You know, I think, you know, like he was saying, I think that they're going to embrace it. That seemed to be my takeaway from that promo, is that they're going to embrace it and go with, you know, almost sort of using some of the heat that Dixie has to try to put some of that on him. And then, you know, if he were to ever go back to WWE, I think they'll probably go with a different name. That's what they tend to do. I don't know who owns the EC3 name, the Ethan Carter name. I would imagine TNA has it trademarked because he wasn't that character until he got to TNA. So I would imagine that they have that name trademarked. Or Impact or Anthem at this point would own it, obviously, would have the trademark to that name. So I don't think he'd ever use that in WWE. He'd probably go back and just play a different character or play the same type of character he plays now, just with a different name. Just because, you know what, they haven't really referenced the Carter stuff, him being a Carter. Until tonight, it hasn't been referenced very much over the last year or so. I think it mainly because he's been a babyface, but now that he's a heel again, I think they're going to try to play into some of the negative feelings that people have towards Dixie Carter. I think they're going to try to play into some of that and get some of that heat on EC3.
Yeah, they've definitely dropped that connection over the past few months. I'd never thought about that, but yeah, I guess if he did go back to WWE, I would hope he wouldn't be Derek Bateman again and use that gimmick. He's done some indie shows, though, and I believe he was EC3, so I don't know if that's like Impact just allowing him to use that name. I'm assuming that's what it is. I'm guessing if they laid claim to the Broken Universe, then they're probably going to say they have EC3. So that's probably bad for him because I think he's established himself a bit with fans, and WWE isn't going to, you know, try to buy out Impact for that name.
Yeah, you know, there's other ways around it. You could change the name to something that's very similar, obviously. You know, it's a completely different scenario, but it's actually sort of ties in a little bit. It was an interesting story. I was listening to Chris Jericho's podcast earlier today with Samoa Joe, and Jericho asked him about, I think this was dropped on Tuesday, I think it was, but Jericho asked Samoa Joe, you know, how were you able to use the name? And Samoa Joe said, first thing I did was trademark it. You know, he trademarked his own name. and now he leases the name to WWE for them to use, but he still owns it. And that was because he was Samoa Joe long before he came to TNA. You know, he was Samoa Joe from the very beginning, so he had legal rights to that name. Ethan Carter III was a name that was given to him, you know, when he got to TNA. So I don't think he'd have any legal right to own it himself. TNA would if they have applied for the trademark, and I assume they would, or have, that they would own the rights to that character and that name. But, you know, and we've seen it before. You could send him back in something similar and or a name that's somewhat close to EC3, maybe even give it the same initials, or give the initials ECB or something. I mean, we've seen people do things like that. But I wanted to touch on a couple of, I guess we could call them bigger picture topics too. And the first one is something that I was thinking about earlier today, and it has to do with the number of talents that they've lost. And you look back at the beginning of the year, you know, from Christmas time to now, and Impact has lost the Hardys. They've lost, obviously, to WWE. They've lost Crazy Steve to WWE, Drew Galloway to NXT, Mike Bennett and Maria, who I know it's been reported on PWTorch.com, they are headed to WWE as well, most likely on the SmackDown side of their roster. They've lost a lot of central figures. You know, Crazy Steve probably at the bottom of that list, but the Hardys were in main events. Mike Bennett and Maria were near the top of the heavyweight division, and you could argue at the top of the women's division in Maria. Drew Galloway, you know, when he was hurt in the fall, but was still at the top of the heavyweight division. They've lost a lot of key central figures, and I guess my point is, and I want to get your thoughts on this, if you were to tell me back in November, hey, first of the year, TNA is going to lose Matt and Jeff Hardy, they're going to lose Drew Galloway, they're going to lose Mike Bennett and Maria, are they going to be okay? I would have told you without hesitation, no. Like, that's going to decimate them. It hasn't. I think they've done a pretty good job of absorbing those losses. And they've had some guys come back, obviously. But what has been your take on how they've absorbed those losses? Because, you know, if we were to do a show in the fall and you were to tell me that by early in 2017, all of those guys and women would have been off the roster, and including there's some other ones too. I mean, if you think of the fact that, you know, Gail Kim hasn't been on the show for a while, there's several others. I mean, if you were to tell me that all of those people would have been gone from the roster, I would have told you that they would be in a very, very rough position. But having seen the way they've been able to handle it, I think they've played it quite well.
Yeah, completely agree. You know, the Hardys at one point, they seemed like they would have been just a huge blow to them because they helped bring them their biggest ratings since they've been on Pop TV. So lucky for Impact that they left when they did, when they were at their coolest as an act, not like actually cool, like cold as an act. They've done a great job. Like, from, maybe it's just like from a personal standpoint, but I would much rather watch LAX come in and do their act and feel fresh and cool than see the Hardys do what they were doing at the end, where they were talking to giraffes every week and just showing up at random shows. It just makes for a much better, exciting show. I think the Hardys would still be a great addition to Impact if they were still around. They'd still be great players, but the way they left, it was kind of not that big of a loss. So I think Impact has done a great job covering for all these people, and the ratings have remained either similar or they've gone up a little bit.
Yeah, I think from a viewership standpoint, you know, they are where they're going to be on Pop until they can maybe get to a new network. And that's a topic I want to hit on in a few minutes. We do have to get to a break. But yeah, you know what? I know back at the end of the Hardy run, you and I were talking on this very show, you know what? The Hardy act is starting to get a little old. You know, when they were doing some of the Expedition for Gold stuff, you know, I know me personally, and I think we were both on the same page, we were growing a little tired of what the act was just because it was always the same. It was just recycling some of the stuff they had done from the fall and the summer.
Yeah, it was just like they killed the golden goose. They did too much of it. Doing Tag Team Apocalypto, when you do 2 hours devoted to their nonsense, it's fun nonsense, but it's nonsense. it just kind of, that was like the moment it jumped the shark for me, where it was no longer fun to watch them talk to drafts and teleport. You know, some people still loved it and they were still hot with the crowd, but overall, it just felt like they were kind of wearing out their welcome in that act.
Yeah, I agree. You know, it was interesting to see how that played out. We got to take another quick break here, though. We're going to be back with a couple of more topics that I wanted to talk about, including the future of what their television deal may look like, whether Pop is the place where they're going to be long-term or not, some other, you know, bigger picture type topics to close the show. But before we do, we're going to take a quick commercial break to tell you about PWTorch.com VIP. This is the best money you could spend on a monthly basis. Trust me, being a PW Porch VIP member, if you enjoy things like the live cast, you would enjoy the many exclusive VIP podcasts that you would get on a weekly basis if you are a PWTorch.com VIP member, including the daily Wade Keller hotline. You can hear a lot more about PW Torch VIP in this plug, and then we'll be back in the show. You're listening to the PW Torch live cast Impact Post Show.
If you're a fan of the PW Torch livecast, you might want to consider a PW Torch VIP membership. When you do that, you get access to an exclusive RSS feed of not only ad-free, plug-free versions of every single PW Torch livecast, but also over 50 other VIP exclusive podcasts per month, including the every single day Wade Keller Hotline. I also host three other flagship VIP exclusive podcasts: The Midweek Fix with Todd Martin, The Weekend Bruce Mitchell Audio Show, each about 2 hours in length, and the post pay-per-view roundtables with the 1 hour analysis of every WWE pay-per-view and some other ones too. Also, ad-free access to PWTorchVIP.com, and that is mobile friendly and PC and desktop friendly. And also access to almost three decades of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter, dating back to the late 1980s, over 1,400 back issues, with my pay-per-view reports on every single pay-per-view match since the late 1980s, with star ratings and match descriptions, roundtable reviews from the staff on every pay-per-view, cover stories on the biggest story every single week in pro wrestling, march through them as a VIP member 1 week at a time, read our exclusive Torch Talks with pro wrestling's biggest names, hard-hitting editorials, backstage tidbits you will not hear anywhere else, and much more. It's all available. Check out details at pwtorch.com/govip. That's pwtorch.com/govip. Exclusive podcasts, exclusive new newsletters every week, ad-free access to our website, and access to 28-plus years of archives. It's all waiting for you if you go VIP. Find out more details, a checklist of all the benefits of being a VIP member, along with testimonials from current members and a sign-up form that's mobile-friendly. Takes about 90 seconds to sign up. Go check it out today, pwtorch.com/govip.
All right, back here in the PW Torch livecast, Mike McMahon and Andrew Socek, both of pwtorch.com with you. Andrew, not breaking news, but a news item that hit this week. They are going to tape some Impact episodes in India coming up. I think from what I read, it's going to be the last couple of episodes before they get to Slammiversary, the first weekend in July. This was something that they were supposed to do, what was it, like 2 years ago? And they ended up canceling the tour. I think some financial backing, you know, backed out towards the end, but it does seem like they're going to head over there. I think I read they're going to tape four episodes, so that's a market that I think they do pretty well in. I think Sony 6 is the network they're on over there. It's a pretty big network over in India, and I think they do pretty well from a rating standpoint. I think part of the deal is they need to come over and tape some television, so I think it'll look, you know, a little good to get the show out of the Impact Zone for the first time in a long time, to get a fresh look in a fresh background, I guess, to the show. It's some episodes that, you know, I'm looking forward to once they finally get to them.
Yeah, I think that's a smart move. Over the past few years, some of their better episodes, just from an atmosphere point, have been the UK ones. And that's been a bit of a shame that they don't do those anymore. A lot of those guys felt like stars because of how crazy the audience was for them. So I'm curious to see how it'll be in India. I think it'll be more fun just because, like, the Ring to King, I watched a few of those a few years ago, but the crowd was pretty excited for everything that they saw. So I think it'll make Impact feel like a bigger deal, just being able to get out of the country and get in front of a completely different audience.
Yeah, and you know what, too, from like, just from a business model standpoint, it sort of makes sense to me that, and again, I'm not looking at their financials, obviously, but I don't know how you could rationalize taping in the impact zone being cheaper than taping somewhere else in the country, in an arena. You know, assuming you think you can draw a crowd, that's the biggest thing. Because if you could rent a building that, even if it seats, you know, 3,000 people, if you could fill and sell 3,000 tickets and get people into the building, that's going to pay your production cost. Right now, you're in an impact zone. You're renting the studio. You're paying all the production cost. It's not being offset at all by any live event or gate revenue. I mean, maybe the problem with them right now is they're drawing 300,000 viewers. They haven't been on Spike in a while. Maybe they just they fear that they're not going to be able to draw a crowd, and I think that could be a legitimate fear. But, you know, it just it makes sense to me that you would want to be in a position where you could sell tickets and get people paying money to enter the building. Seem like, you know, and again, maybe the fear is that they don't think they'll be able to draw a crowd. I know they're going to be touring soon, and maybe that's going to be an indication of the types of crowds they're going to be drawing. But it just seems like it would make more sense to me. You got to fly the talent in either way. You got to have to put them up in. You know, I don't know what they pay from a travel standpoint, but you're going to be flying, even if it's just airfare, whether you fly somebody to Orlando or whether you fly somebody to, you know, Philadelphia for a television taping, what's really the difference, right?
Yeah, that's true. I think like back in 2012-ish, they were going on the road and recording two episodes at a time. At that time, they lost a crazy ton of money, even though they were drawing like 4,000 people, but they had Hulk Hogan under contract, and he was making like $30,000 for every appearance. You know, they had Rob Van Dam and a bunch of other names. So right now that the roster has scaled down a bit, I'm assuming more affordable. It would be, I would love to see it. I would love to see him get out in front of a new crowd. And I think there's just something, as good as Impact has been in feeling fresh, there's still like some staleness. Like, I don't know if you've ever noticed this, but there's a woman in the front row. She's probably like 60. She wears like a Magnus shirt. She's been there for like 12 weeks in a row. And it's just, and I mean, great. It's great to have passionate fans, but there's like people like that who are there every single week. There was like a Fire Josh Matthews sign, and it was the same sign for like 4 weeks in a row. So there's just like a staleness there that they should try to get away from as soon as it is financially feasible.
Yeah, you know, and I think you got to be strategic about it, too. I mean, they probably have data that shows which markets they draw well in, you know, from a pop TV standpoint. So maybe you try to target some markets where you think you could draw. If it's the Northeast, you know, you can, although New York is expensive, but the Northeast in general is expensive. But you would think that the Northeast area where it's a little more densely populated, I would imagine, is where they draw a little bit more people, too. They'd be able to draw some crowds. I mean, they were doing that. They were taping television in New York for a while in Manhattan Center.
Yeah, and those, I mean, those looked good for TV. I think a couple of them sold out, but even the ones that didn't, it was just a more fun crowd and a different atmosphere. I think just add to the overall product. It's an intangible that makes it just feels bigger than it actually is.
And two, you know, I remember, I think it was the first episodes on Pop. Weren't they taping like in a casino somewhere in Pennsylvania, if I remember correctly?
Was that the old ECW arena, or is that the Hammerstein, or am I crazy? I was thinking they did eight episodes of that. Or
yeah, they were in some, I think it was some sort of casino somewhere in Pennsylvania, like in a ballroom. But, you know, whatever it is, like you said, just a different environment, get in front of some different people. It's never a bad thing. You know, and I think it could make it feel a little more, make the shows feel a little more special, a little bigger. And you would think, again, that you could offset some of your production costs, being able to actually sell tickets and maybe sell sponsorships on the shows and things of that nature. Get more people, you know, not only selling tickets, but I would imagine you'd get more people to sell merchandise to. The same people going to the Impact Zone every week or every couple of weeks for a television taping probably aren't going to buy as much in merchandise as the people who might see the show come through once a year. You probably get more on a per head basis on those people you're going to get in once a year than you would the same people that show up every single week. So you would think that from a business standpoint, you'd be able to make that work. But again, you know what? Maybe the concern is just, hey, we're drawing so much fewer people on TV. We don't think we're going to draw the crowd, and you run the risk of being, you know, in, even if it's in a small building, you know, do you want to be in a 2,000 seat building and have 300 people there? Probably not, you know, whereas in the impact zone, you could darken it up and scale it down and still make it look good. In some of these places, you may not be able to do that, but you know what, if Ring of Honor can go into some smaller buildings and draw a crowd, I would think that Impact should be able to, especially because they are picking up some steam a little bit. I think that, again, strategically placed in the right markets, you could make it work. Another thing, though, that I wanted to talk about, it sort of is related to this, the future of the show on Pop TV. From what I understand, from what I've read, their deal with Pop expires at the end of the year. It's either definitely a barter type deal, or it's somewhat of a barter type deal where they get some advertising, Pop gets some advertising, but Pop isn't necessarily paying a rights fee for the show. So they're not making a whole lot of money from the television product, which again goes back to, okay, you're paying all this money to produce it, you're not making anything from it. It doesn't seem like it's a deal that makes a whole lot of sense. You know, I think from a business standpoint, the Pop deal as it is currently constituted, not only does not make sense for Impact, it's not something that they can do long term and probably survive. So the question becomes, a year from now, when we're doing this show, do you think we're watching this show on Pop TV? Do you think we're watching this show on a different network? Or do you think we're watching this show in a different way? You know, with some over-the-top type streaming platforms getting into play now a little bit. What do you think the future should be for Pop, for Impact Wrestling when it comes to their North American distribution? And the wild card being here that they're owned by, essentially they're owned by a network. It's a Canadian network, but they're owned by a network. Could that help them land different television distribution in the United States, do you think? Or do you think that maybe they go down a different road altogether with something like the Fight app or something like that?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I mean, the new Jeff Jarrett and Anthem have done a good job at landing new deals. They just got on Spike TV in England, so that's huge for them. That's a lot of money that they weren't making before. I just wonder, stateside, like, how are they going to talk another network into this? I mean, when they left Spike, they were drawing 800,000 people, and that was down from 1.2 million. When they went to Destination America, they were doing about 500,000. Right now, they're doing 300,000. So I just don't know how, like, a new network is going to see that and go, oh, yeah, obviously, we're going to be able to add a couple hundred thousand people. I mean, maybe Jarrett's a great negotiator, already has – there's some sort of other metrics we don't know about, but I would – oh, man, I would say it's either going to be on Pop or another network of that level. What are you kind of thinking?
You know, I don't know. I think it's going to be really interesting in the fall to see how this plays out when that negotiation starts to happen. Because the Pop deal as it is right now, they probably can't survive on. So the question is, how much does Anthem's experience and the fact that they're sort of in that marketplace already? They own the Fight Network in Canada. I mean, they're in that network place already. Do those connections help them with a television deal in the United States? That's the first thing that I think is an interesting layer to all this. The other thing too, from, if you believe reports, and who knows what the truth actually is, they lost the Spike deal because Dixie Carter was not truthful about, or at least in part, because Dixie Carter was not truthful about Vince Russo's involvement on the program after Spike executives said they didn't want him involved at all. They lost the Destination America deal, I believe, after she reportedly accidentally sent an email to an executive calling the guy an idiot in the network, and it's a bunch of idiots.
Oh, yeah.
And everything else. So it seems like a lot of their issues from a television standpoint sort of stemmed from the old guard, the old people in charge. So I wonder, you know, I'm not saying, hey, Spike's going to be ready to jump in and take them back, but the fact that the old guard is gone, do people look at the product as maybe something they could take on and grow? I don't think Spike TV is going to happen again. I think that something of the level of Spike is going to happen again. But I think they could, just between Anthem's connections and the fact that it's run by different people, people that actually know television, I think they could find themselves in a better network than Pop TV. If they decide that that's even the right way to go. You know, do they look at it something like a Hulu or Netflix, or is there something else out there that's going to be more beneficial from a monetary standpoint? I mean, who knows, right? I mean, with all these streaming platforms that are really coming of age now, we, you know, cord cutting and everything else, is a company of impact size, WWE, I think WWE is always going to need it, but is a company of impact size even going to need cable distribution 2 or 3 years from now? I'm not sure they're going to have to, you know. And the big thing here, the big thing that I find interesting about it is we saw what before the Spike deal, they had the Fight app. And the big thing right before the Spike deal was you could watch Impact as it aired in the U.S. on the Fight app. And I think it was like $4 a month or whatever it was. And there you go. You know, is that something they go to down the line? I mean, is it more beneficial for them to have 300,000 people watching on Pop TV where they're sharing advertising revenue and that's it? Or is it more beneficial for them to get, you know, even if they only get half of that, if they have 100,000 people paying $5 a month for the Fight app and they're guaranteed $500,000 a month, you know, which is more beneficial? I would think something like the Fight app, even if their viewership gets cut, you know, by two-thirds, and only 100,000 people are watching, 100,000 people at $4.99 a month, it's $500,000. I guarantee you that's more than what they're making now at Pop.
That's an interesting route. What they're doing now can't last forever. I think the big thing is going to be, can they grow these ratings? For the most part, the ratings have been about 300,000. I think last week or 2 weeks ago did like 320. So that's in the right direction, but it's just like a blip. It just keeps coming back. So if they can get it closer to 350, maybe 400,000, which probably isn't going to happen in the next 7 months, maybe, and if they start putting out great shows. But like, that seems to be their best bet to land another good network, one that's going to pay them more. Otherwise, they really should be exploring some form of network. I mean, yes, charge half of what WWE does. They're still going to have nowhere near enough content on their network, but there's fans out there who would like to see a 2006 AJ Styles Samoa Joe match in HD, and just like offer, you know, Slammiversary, you know, offer them a few shows a month, just try to get something going. It's strange that they haven't done that already, because like you said, they've done it in England. But there's no like plan of doing it stateside yet.
Yeah, you know, and that's the thing. You know, the WWE put a lot of money and a lot of infrastructure, of course, into their network. It seems like Anthem, with their Fight app, some of that infrastructure is already there. So, you know, do they go to, hey, we're going to be Impact Wrestling, it's going to air on the Fight Network in Canada, it's going to air on Spike TV in the UK, and in the United States, you can watch it every Thursday night at 8 p.m. on the Fight app. So when the new episode goes up, you can watch it, you know, or maybe they stream it or whatever it is. You know, I wonder if they decide to go in a direction like that. And even, you know, again, we don't know what they're making from Pop TV, but they have 300,000 people watching their show. Even if 50,000 people bought the app and that was it, 50,000 people is $250,000 a month. I can't imagine that they're generating $250,000 a month from Pop TV. That'd be essentially $60,000 an episode that Pop is paying them for the show from advertising revenue. I can't see it. Maybe I'm wrong. I just can't see a network the level of Pop TV being able to spend $60,000 an episode. I don't think that's what they're getting. It's going to be really interesting, I think, you know, the end of this year, to see what happens with them, because they could end up with another cable network, like you said. And I think that Anthem's experience there could be a big help in that regard. But it's going to be really interesting, I think, from their business standpoint, 8 months from now, to find out where they are and what they're going to be doing as we head into 2018. And maybe the fact that they're trying to get some of these bigger names under contract, Magnus and El Patron and some of these WWE guys, I think maybe that could be because they're trying to make themselves attractive. You know, that might be part of what they're trying to do.
Yeah, it's weird because they seem more stable than they've been since 2010. Just years, but in another way, it still seems like I can't predict, you know, it's like hard to predict their future and how they're actually going to make decent money off of this investment and where the company is headed. And it still just does not feel stable, even with all these new wrestlers coming in or old wrestlers coming in and Jared and Mantel and Dia Moore taking over creative. It's just like, it seems there's still going to have to be big changes within the next couple of years.
Yeah, I think at the very least, they've got more time. You know, Anthem has more money than obviously Dixie Carter had. They were struggling to pay anybody. Nobody was getting paid, you know, the last quarter of last year. So they're borrowing money from Billy Corgan just to literally keep their pay-per-view from having to be canceled. That I don't think that's a worry at this point. They're, you know, Anthem Sports and Entertainment, the company is big enough to sustain some of those losses for now. The question is how long are they going to be willing to sustain those losses? And, you know, they say they're in it for the long term, but, you know, I guess we'll find out here over the next probably, I don't think it'll be, you know, in the short term, probably the next coming years to see what they decide to do with it moving forward in the States and elsewhere. But, you know, they are generating new deals. Like I said, Spike TV in the UK is a big one. So they seem to be out there looking for deals like that. So I think that's a good sign for where they think they can go in the future. The question is just whether or not they can get there and what it's going to look like here in the U.S. But anything else you want to add before we wrap up this week's edition of our Impact Post Show?
I don't think so. I hope Rockstar Spud's okay. I hope he can someday learn to walk again after that hammer beating. I will quickly plug PW Podcasts again. I've been working on pwpodcast.com with Wade Keller the past few weeks, getting that site up and running again. We are doing recaps of all the biggest podcasts out there from wrestlers, Steve Austin, Jim Ross, Bruce Prichard, Tony Schiavone. So if you don't have time to watch or to listen to all these shows for 10, 20 hours a week, check out PW Podcasts. We've got great reports from a lot of contributors coming in. New stuff posted daily, so check out the site and learn what everybody in the wrestling podcast world is talking about.
You know, I like some of them too, that they have like just a quick recap right at the beginning. So if you don't have time to even read through the whole report, some of the reports you can get a pretty quick hit on what happened just in the first, you know, couple paragraphs. So definitely check out PW Podcast. Check out pwtorch.com VIP. At pwtorch.com/govip. You have been listening to the PW Torch Livecast Impact Post Show. Andrew and I are here with you every Thursday night, right when Impact goes off the air. Tomorrow night, it is the primetime edition of the show with Bruce Mitchell and Rich Fan on Monday. On Sunday night, there will be a post show. I don't know who the host will be on that show, but there will be a post payback show on the PW Torch Livecast. Monday, Wade Keller will be by with the Raw post show. Wade's back on Tuesday with the SmackDown post show when SmackDown goes off the air. Wade hosts the midweek flagship on Wednesday afternoon. He had Jason Powell of ProWrestling.net as his guest this past Wednesday. And then Thursday afternoon, Wade hosts Interview Thursday. He had Mick Karch on the show earlier today. And then Andrew and I will be back with you next Thursday night following Impact Wrestling. So, we thank you guys for tuning in this week. We thank you guys for calling in this week. And we will be back next week right here on the PW Torch Livecast Impact Post Show. This is live.